An exhibition of miniature paintings by Indian artists done over the course of 8 centuries that's now on view at the Metropolitan Museum of Art refutes the long-held idea that Indian painters mostly worked anonymously. The show, called Wanderer of the Age, Master Painters of India 1100 to 1900, highlights the work of 40 artists who've been identified by art historians. John Guy, who is the Florence and Herbert Irving Curator of the Arts of South and Southeast Asian Art at the Met, is the co-curator of this exhibit, which runs through this Sunday, January 8th. It's about to close, so we were very pleased that we were able to get him in here before it did. Thank you so much for coming by.
It's a pleasure.
Doesn't the way the show has been organized with the paintings of individual artists grouped together chronologically mark a departure from the way Indian paintings have usually been displayed?
It does. The conventional approach has been to show the painters as representing the work of a particular patron or a particular region and style. So you have regional groupings or works grouped according to major mogul
and why emperors, why that approach?
Well, it was in a sense long overdue. The scholarship that's made this exhibition possible, which many people have contributed over the last 20 odd years, has allowed a sort of revisiting of this question and given the opportunity to present a biographical approach to Indian painting, which has not been possible before.
Well, when did art historians first begin to suspect that Indian hadn't been the retiring wallflowers that many people had assumed they were?
Well, indeed. I mean, it's been known in principle for a long, long time. The work of early 20th century art historians like Ananda Kumaraswamy and others already identified some of the major Mughal painters, for example, who are named in the contemporary diaries and biographies of the time.
But they didn't sign their work, and so that's always been a problem.
Vast majority did not sign their work, but many were annotated by the librarians and clerks who maintained the imperial collections. And it's only really been the archival work that's taken place in the last generation or so, which has allowed us to identify many other painters who are working through palace archives, through pilgrimage records, land title records, this sort of thing.
And if you know what you're looking for, you can usually spot certain stylistic similarities from one painter as opposed to another.
Indeed. You get a real sense of schools and lineages. The styles of painting were transmitted. And what's also revealing as the biographies become clearer and more fleshed out is there are very close family relationships between many of the painters. And this helps define the stylistic relationship as well.
Well, many of the paintings you've included were created as illustrations for books or manuscripts. Could that have been one of the reasons that they weren't signed?
Indeed, many of them, the art of the book in India is very much the medium for painting, apart from the very early tradition of mural painting, palace and temple mural painting. The other great tradition, one which has come down to us principally, is illustrated books and manuscripts.
You mentioned that many of these artists were related. Was it common for fathers to teach their sons and brothers to learn from each other? Is this an aspect of the Indian caste culture?
It is very much based on caste, yes. I mean, Indian traditional skills were transmitted father to son through lineages, and we have many relationships between father and son, between brothers and so on, which have emerged through these biographical studies.
You've labeled the paintings by artists who could not be identified simply as the master of a region at a particular time. For example, the oldest paintings in this exhibit were done on palm leaves in the 12th century by an artist who was not specifically identified. Do you think that you'll ever be able to turn up his name?
Exceedingly unlikely. This is one of the earliest work in the show, a 12th century Buddhist Prajaparamita manuscript. And in fact, we have from a small corpus of surviving 11th and 12th century manuscripts, we have the names of the donors in some cases, the names of the monasteries in which the works were painted on occasions, even occasionally the name of the scribe who wrote the word. And the word was always more highly valued than the picture culturally in India, but never the name of the painter.
My guest is John Guy, co-curator with, now I'm probably going to mess up his name, Jared Britsky. And the exhibit is called Wonder of the Age, Master Painters of India, 1100 to 1900. It's at the Metropolitan Museum of Art through this Sunday and then Does it move on?
No, it's already shown in Europe, in Zurich, at the Museum Rietberg, where it began, and we are the only other venue. And, so it's your last chance this Sunday.
Are these, the Met and the Museum Rietberg, owners of large collections of paintings of this sort?
Yes, both institutions are major lenders to the show, but it's very much an international loan exhibition. We have important loans from Windsor Castle, Her Majesty the Queen's collection, from the Aga Khan Foundation. Many other major international museums have contributed to the exhibition.
And the exhibit itself has 200 paintings that take up 6 galleries. By the way, we have a wonderful slideshow of some images from it on our show page at WNYC.org. Aren't there a couple of paintings where the artist actually put himself into the work? This is something we associate with some European artists. Velázquez might have stuck himself in a painting, or Michelangelo. But the Indians did this as well?
This was an innovation that took place in the early Mughal period in the reign of Akbar in the late 16th century, in the 1590s. For the first time, we see painters very boldly and undoubtedly with permission inserting their own portraits into the marginal areas of a painting, identifiable readily by the fact they're holding their identifier, their attribute, if you like, which is a portfolio in which their paintings are carried about and presented to their patron. So this is a new innovation.
Many of these paintings are extremely small. Some are only 2 inches by 3 inches, and they cover a wide range of subject matter. Could you tell us why they were painted that small? What kinds of books were they put into?
Those very tiny dimensions that you mentioned relate to the palm leaf manuscripts, and that's defined by the size of the folios. They're generally only about 3 inches maximum height. Traditionally, Indian paintings have been in landscape format, even when paper was introduced in the 13th and 14th century. They continued in this landscape format following the traditional birch bark or palm leaf manuscript. It's only really with the coming of Islam and the introduction of the codex book, the vertical format book that we're familiar with, that we get larger format paintings being introduced.
At the Met, there's a wonderful new exhibit of Italian Renaissance portraiture. Is portraiture part of this tradition in India as well?
Again, this was an innovation in the Mughal period, the name that keeps occurring is that of Emperor Akbar, the great innovator, great liberal thinker.
Even though in Islamic scripture, people isn't the depiction of people forbidden?
This is certainly the case. The Mughals, for the most part, under the three most enlightened Mughal rulers, under Akbar, Jahangir, and Shah Jahan, these prohibitions were simply ignored. And Akbar commissioned portraits and had albums made up of portraits of all his noblemen in the 1590s.
One reviewer called this the art of heroic feats, courtly love, the thrill of battle, palace intrigue, fantastic gods, beautiful animals, and haunting landscapes. That's a wide range of things. They also painted some highly erotic works which aren't included in the exhibit. Would they have been done in different kinds of venues?
No, the erotic themes are not strongly represented in the exhibition, that's true. But some of the painters who are represented also produced some very erotic pictures privately commissioned by their patron for their own patron's enjoyment.
Many of them also contain wonderful depictions of animals. Is that because certain animals had a special significance at the time?
Well, India certainly had a great regard both for the lion and the elephant. These great majestic animals, often identified with kingship. And the taming and hunting of these animals was an important part of noble pursuits. Royal hunting was a very important activity.
We have on our slideshow a copy of a picture of Ram Singh the First of Kota hunting a rhinoceros while riding an elephant. There are camel fights and other kinds of hunting scenes.
Indeed, yes. The picture you describe is an extraordinary, wild, and dramatic picture. One would be familiar to many viewers. Belonged to the collection of Stuart Carey Welsh, great collector of Indian painting, former chairman of Islamic art at the Met, a wonderful painting.
These paintings are incredibly detailed, and you've made magnifying glasses available so that visitors can examine them. Is there any evidence that the artists used magnifying glasses when they were working on these things?
I think rather they were just very young for the most part.
And they were working
extremely good eyesight.
And some of those brushes must have been single hair.
Well, this is indeed that's the case. I mean, they used a very very fine animal hair was tapering down sometimes to a single hair, remarkable detail. And the exhibition itself invites revisiting because I think with the use of magnifying glasses, you get a real sense of discovery as you go through the show. You make your own discoveries.
But Indian miniatures don't seem to have been exhibited as frequently as collections of larger, more traditional paintings on canvas. Are they more difficult to display, or are they just thought of as less crowd-pleasing than larger paintings?
I think it's partly to do with scale that you mentioned earlier. I think people, these works require more effort on the part of the viewer, if you like, to study them closely for the detail to emerge and with clarity. But they're extremely rewarding when you take the time to do that.
The show does conclude with two large paintings that were made for the Maharana of Udaipur around 1890. They've never been allowed out of the palace before?
Indeed. These are works which were produced by the two sons of the great Rajasthani painter Tara, Mohan Lal and Shiv Lal, were painted for the palace, and really in the European manner. These are large works framed to be hung on the wall, not painted on the wall, not murals, not album illustrations. They're really in the European mode, very much inspired by panoramic photography, which is becoming a very important new medium, and which, of course, was the, if you like, the kiss of death to court painting. It never really survived the introduction of the tripod camera.
Because many of the artists in the earlier times seem to have functioned in the way that war photographers or news photographers might today. They travel with their patrons? Very much.
We have quite detailed accounts of this in the reigns of Jahangir and Shah Jahan, for example. We know the painters were actually on the road. The Mughals traditionally were very mobile. They didn't like to stay in a whole year in a palace. They would be on the move, either on military campaign or consolidating their interests, and the artists would accompany them and often document contemporary events.
Now, who was meant to see these paintings? They were not put on exhibit for the general public, were they?
Absolutely not. No, these were very much private works for the private pleasure of the patron, in case of the Mughals, of the emperor, shared with his courtiers and the ladies of the Zenana.
And I haven't mentioned women in these paintings, but what do they tell us about the relations between men and women at the time? Or, I guess, over... We're talking about 8th century, so things must have changed a lot.
Well, indeed. You see women of the Zenana, for example, in the Muslim court settings, and, of course, much of the later Rajput and Punjabi painting of the 17th and 18th centuries is devoted to the exploration of love themes, or the anguish of love, the heightened passions. All of it explores these emotional states through the medium of painting. So women, of course, you know, a key part of that dialogue.
Where does the title of the exhibit come from? Wonder of the Age.
Well, it's not, as you might imagine, a marketing puff. It is, in fact, the honorific title awarded by Jahangir himself, by the emperor, to his most eminent painter, Mansur. And this was repeated. A number of other painters, like Farrukh Beg, also was given the title, Persian title, Wonder of the Age.
Would these artists be known in India, or is this something that... Because so many of these works wound up in American museums, British museums, German museums, would not all be all that well known in their home country.
Many of the more eminent painters are indeed well known in India. Some of the newer discoveries are less well known. But we have four major institutions from India as key lenders to the exhibition, including the National Museum in New Delhi.
The Met has also produced a gorgeous hardcover book containing 165 illustrations to coincide with the book, which you edited with Yorod Brichgi. And that's being distributed by Yale University Press. So even though this exhibit will be closing this Sunday, alas, we'll still have a chance to enjoy it, in some cases full size.
Indeed. I mean, many of the works reproduced in this catalog are one-to-one scale, so you can really get a sense of and some beautiful details as well.
And you can't do that with a Caravaggio in a catalog.
This is true.
Thank you so much for being with us. John Guy is co-curator with Jorrit Brichki of Wonder of the Age, Master Painters of India, 1100 to 1900, at the Met through this coming Sunday. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Leonard.